It's Wednesday. It's 1 o'clock. It's time for the Indie Media Radio London show, brought to you on Resonance FM 104.4, bringing protest stories direct from the streets, posted onto the indiemedia.org.uk newswire and to global indie media sites worldwide. We look forward to presenting your stories, so keep posting them to indiemedia.org.uk. Hello, welcome to this week's show. It's 16th of November and it's cold, but it's bright and sunny, and we've got lots of stories for you today, as well as a phone interview with Andrew Beckett, the spokesperson for the Edo campaign, or the anti-Edo campaign. But now we're going to go to a bit of Barracuda. Here goes.
Thank you. second part of the UN World Summit on the Information Society, WSIS, opens today in Tunis, Tunisia. The first part of the UN-sponsored event was held in Switzerland in December 2003, where people from all around the world gathered for meetings and actions during the official meeting in Geneva, expressing protest under the slogan, WSIS, we seize. The UN summit was criticised for the unprecedented deep involvement of corporations and for ignoring the links between development, poverty and communication, as well as civil liberties and what campaigners call communication rights. The choice of place for the second part of the WSIS, Tunis, is more than hypocritical for a summit on the Information Society. While Tunisia is catching up economically with the capitalist North, it's far from any information society if you're talking about freedom of information. But free access to knowledge for everybody is not the goal of the WSIS, with the summit organisers' plan being to concentrate on governmental and corporate use of information and communication technologies. Furthermore, in stark contrast to 2003, it seems almost impossible to express protest against the summit, with Tunisia having an appalling human rights record. Nevertheless, some initiatives and human rights groups are holding their own citizens' summit alongside. Critical campaigners say the summit not only gives legitimacy to a repressive regime, its focus also ignores the social situation in the local Maghreb region. The majority of people in this part of the world do not have access to communication tools, and the authoritarian regimes in the region are reliable allies to the European governments in suppressing freedom of movement. For lots of links and reports of the WSIS, check out the feature on the UK Indie Media website.
And now we have an article, which is a short interview with Arthur Levin of the International Telecommunication Union about internet governance, which is overseen by America, but other countries want it run by an international body.
15 years after the World Wide Web made the internet user-friendly, this communication tool continues to expand its reach into our daily lives. It is also indisputable that information technologies are critical to the economic development of countries. The World Summit on the Information Society, which begins its second phase in Tunis next week, will address issues such as internet governance and bridging the digital divide between rich and poor countries. UN Radio's Bisera Kostova has the story.
The Tunis phase of the Information Society Summit will need to tackle the contentious issue of internet governance, which was left unresolved in the first phase 2 years ago in Geneva. That meeting asked the UN to form a working group to make recommendations on this issue. Currently, a US-based group called the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, or ICANN, is the nearest thing to a ruling body. The private company was set up by the U.S. Department of Commerce to register and oversee the Internet site domain names used all over the world. The United States wants to maintain control over the addressing system, but other countries want it to be taken over by an international body. Arthur Levin of the International Telecommunication Union is optimistic that these differences can be resolved.
This is the first time that the world community is considering the Internet. You know, other UN summits have dealt with issues like poverty, like racism, that have been dealt with for generations and throughout history. Internet is something new, and every new technology has required new solutions and new approaches. So it's not surprising at this point that we have very sharp differences of viewpoint, and we were very hopeful that in Tunis either we will have a beginning solution or at least a way to talk about these issues. And what I think is very important at this point is that the world community, including the United States, agrees that we need to have a global policy dialogue on these issues as a process to try and develop some solutions.
Mr. Levin says the issues posed by internet governance are similar to those raised by previous telecommunications advances.
The same types of issues arose when the telegraph was first introduced. How do we make sure that we only have one system and it works everywhere in the world? And this is why the IT was founded 140 years ago. With each new technology, you have a new set of challenges, but the goal remains the same, that the service is affordable, it works well, it's interoperable. For example, with a telephone, you can pick it up, you can dial anywhere in the world. Each country has only one country code. All these things have been sorted out through international agreements and consensus. So I think we can be generally optimistic in the long term we'll find solutions for the Internet.
To those who say the Internet is working just fine under the present arrangements and you shouldn't fix something that's not broken, Mr. Levin replies that actually there are problems that need fixing.
There are some who are disappointed with the uptake of e-commerce, for example. Why is that? Because of problems with phishing, with spyware, with spam, with security, with network hacking. These kinds of problems are costing, in the United States alone, more than $10 billion a year. So it's a very positive sign that in the summit process, we've got the agreement of the world community to address these problems. We don't have the final solutions, but we have understanding that these are public policy issues that must be addressed by the international community. So when we talk about the control of the internet and whether it's working or not, we have to say that there are many areas in which problems with the internet, and this process hopefully will find solutions to these problems.
Mr. Levin points out that there already is agreement on a lot of issues on the agenda of the Information Society Summit, most importantly on the need to give people in developing countries equal access to the benefits of the internet.
In the first phase, we agreed to a set of targets. These are time-bound targets to connect the world by 2015. Now, one of the ways you do this in the developing world is that we can't instantly get computer access and internet to everybody, but you have community access centers. This is a center that is within, the way we measure it sometimes, is a 5-kilometer walk, that everybody would have this access within 5 kilometers, a full range of quality internet services through a community access service. So this is also part of the policy that we are advocating. We're really focusing on three issues. One is the question of internet governance. Second is the issue of financing and financing of deployment of ICT infrastructure. And the third is, how do we make sure that the commitments that are made are lived up to? That's the important thing. You know, people have criticized UN summits in the past for a lot of noble intentions, but not a lot of concrete results. We're very determined this time around that the commitments that are made are lived up to, both at the national level, the regional level, and international level. So these are really the three key issues of the second phase.
The summit will also discuss ways to help developing countries finance these projects. Reporting for UN Radio, I'm Bisera Kostova.
Two, one, two.
Yeah,
this is Michael Franti here from Spearhead, and you're listening to Indie Media's London Radio, connecting London with the rest of the planet. Stand firm, stay human, hold the vibes, and give the corporation some complications.
Fifteen years after the World Wide Web made the internet user-friendly, this communication...
Hello, we just got interrupted by iTunes deciding to go on its own sweet way. But now we're going to interview Andrew Beckett, the spokesperson for the Anti-Edo campaign, because last week they were at the Royal Courts of Justice. Hello, are you there, Andrew?
Hello, mate.
So what has been happening? I understand that the Attorney General was called as a witness.
The Attorney General, he wasn't so much called as a witness as he was allowed to intervene in the case, because the case itself started to touch on the legality of the war in Iraq. And one of the various, there's been various attempts by activists to get the illegality of the war questioned in the, in a high court, any court at all, really. For example, the people who went and damaged, people who went and damaged the B-52 bombers at Fairford have argued that their actions were an attempt to prevent the crime of bombing, and that's going to the House of Lords at the moment, and the Attorney General is obviously totally implicated in that. In this case, which I don't know if everybody listening knows, is an injunction taken out under the Protection from Harassment Act to prevent protesters from standing outside and demonstrating outside a factory in Brighton which supplies munitions to the UK, US and Israeli militaries. What's happened there was that the protesters were effectively arguing that they were acting prevent or detect a crime, namely the crime of a belligerent war against Iraq and the war crimes committed within that war, such as the attacks on civilians and the attacks on civilian infrastructure. Obviously, the last thing the government wanted was for this, for a high court to actually have to decide whether or not we were preventing a crime. And we submitted a great deal of evidence to the court, eyewitness statements, photographs, evidence coming from the US and UK militaries themselves. And the Attorney General that it was absolutely doing his level best to make sure this wasn't adjudicated on by a court. And unfortunately, he succeeded.
How did he do that?
How did he succeed? Well, basically because the court rolled over and let them tickle his tummy. I mean, it was that blatant. The court itself wasn't going to go against the Attorney General. And that was it. I mean, they even refused to consider the issue of whether or not... We know that Edo MBM supply munitions of the Israeli military, which are used in the occupation of Palestine. Now, that's something that's been declared illegal by several UN resolutions. And the Attorney General dealt with this not by dealing with the issue head-on. He didn't deny that war crimes had occurred or that the bombing of civilians had occurred or anything like this. He wriggled out of it on technicalities. Technicalities on the basis that waging an aggressive war, which, let's not forget, a large number of men were hung for at the Nuremberg trials in 1946. This is what they were actually found guilty of. It wasn't committing genocide, it wasn't committing the Holocaust, it was waging an aggressive war. He wriggled out that by saying that's not a crime within domestic law. It's only a crime within international law, and therefore it's not a crime that we could have been acting to prevent. It's with these sort of technicalities that he was able to weasel out of dealing with the question of whether or not Edo MBM, by supplying the laser guidance mechanisms, are actually guilty of war crimes.
So what's the difference between domestic law and international law? It obviously means international law is irrelevant if nobody's going to uphold it.
Well, effectively, that's what it is. I think they're saying, well, international law is... well, I think this is it. This is what we're talking about here, is where international law is effectively sidelined. It's something solely for governments to consider at their pleasure and not something for ordinary citizens to empower themselves to enforce. And obviously, these people don't want us to be enforcing these laws. I mean, the UK government's quite blatantly waged an illegal war of aggression in Iraq on false pretenses. And they're absolutely desperate to stop this coming to court. And this was obviously our attempt to get it into court. Hopefully other people will succeed. I know that the various human rights lawyers are in attempts to get this, get an adjudication on this. One of the problems we have is that the International Criminal Court system in The Hague, which although it seems to be empowered to put Milosevic on trial, isn't capable of issuing summons to obviously currently serving heads of state. Or issue any sort of adjudication on that. That's the basic difference. International law has got to be kept nicely sealed off from ordinary citizens so that international law can effectively be used as part of the propaganda system. So that only those people who are designated as our enemies can be tried under international law, not our friends, and certainly not ourselves.
So what is the next step for the Edo trial?
The next step for the Edo trial, well, we're finding out this afternoon, actually. We were going to be in court on the 21st of November. So basically, that does look as if that's going to be adjourned now, because they haven't got the evidence ready to prosecute us. And we're demanding a speedy trial. I mean, our human rights are being breached at the moment by the way the police have used the injunction to successfully, at least briefly, imprison two activists. So we want a speedy trial. We want this injunction rubbished as quickly as possible. And what's happening is, by refusing to disclose evidence, the evidence of communication between the Edo MBM and Sussex Police, between the lawyer bringing the case and Sussex Police, and so on and so forth, they're managing to spin the trial out, and they're now pushing for an adjournment. By the end of today, we'll know whether or not we've got that adjournment.
And as far as the Attorney General's statements, the Edo campaign thinking about offering any challenge to those?
We are going to get the evidence. What we're going to do, and what we're allowed by the judge to do, I mean, this is unfortunately the case. This is what we can do, is get out there and say this is what's happened, make as much noise as we can about the fact that the Attorney General is intervening in every going court case to make sure that this never gets tried in a court of law. I mean, this is all stuff like this, because if they got a verdict against them, they would have to have a public inquiry. And a public inquiry into the war in Iraq is the one thing the government doesn't want. So this is how we can challenge it. We can no longer challenge it in the courts. A judge has ruled and that's it. I mean, you have a system like this. I mean, we're under no illusions that the system is fair or that the system is blatantly weighted in the favour of the government and the manufacturers of arms. We didn't initiate this court case. It was brought against us, and we're doing our best to fight it in that arena. I think it's just important that people know that this is what's going on.
And are there any protests coming up outside Edo MBM?
Yes, everyone. We protest every week. If people please could go to our website, which is www.smashedo.org.uk, and check out what's going on. If we're in court next week, we'll be demonstrating outside the Royal Courts of Justice in the morning. But once again, you'll have to check on that. And if you can make an announcement later in the week on the show, that'd be great.
Thanks very much. Good luck.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye.
war. Pigs be out there, occupied army. RBGs, it's a takeover, not a makeover. Yeah. The cops stop you just because you black, that's war. Run you through the system for your prince, that's war. When they call my hood a drug zone, that's war. Slum lord charging you for rent, that's war. Why they so rich and we poor, that's war. If you young and black, you sell crack, that's war. The White House is the rock house, that's war. George Bush coming out his mouth, that's war. Chilling on the corner with your gang, that's war. Pope will do the same damn thing, that's war. When they murdered Amadou Diallo, that's war. Marching in the streets is a strategy of war. Knowing self-defense is a strategy of war. Soldiers try to link with other soldiers in the war. Revolutionaries got to know the art of war. War, what about hip-hop? Use that. Matter of fact, fuck a rap battle. What about a gap battle? Let's take it to the beast and see which cat tattle. Is it Kiss versus Beans or P versus Hov? What about y'all real niggas against the 5-0? This is M1, DPs, don't you forget. Cause you could talk, 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 but that don't mean shit. I ain't gotta pop your top to see where your brains went. This rap shit is way bigger than entertainment. It's the people versus the pigs when it all go down. It's not Pop versus Big, it's who's getting the power. And power ain't money, dog, it's self-determination. Like taking hot and making it the real people station, that's war. Know what I mean? Yeah. Rap war, whatever war. You live a fast life, more or less, more so, it's still war. Dead Prez, the People Radio. Yeah. Get down, get down, get down. RBGZ, biatch.
You are now listening to WRBG, the People's Radio. It's a takeover, not a makeover.
More than 500,000 people took part in over 300 protests across Australia on the 15th of November, the first initiative of a national movement of workers showing their solidarity in opposition to proposed industrial relation laws. Campaigners see the news laws as an attack on workers' conditions by Howard's federal government. Melbourne saw possibly the largest political rally in its history, with up to 250,000 people clogging the heart of the city and marching in a crowd that reached for 18 blocks. Sydney also saw around 45,000 people gathered in Martin Place after an early morning blockade of the M4 motorway, while Perth, Adelaide, Brisbane, Hobart and Darwin all saw unprecedented crowds. The rest of Australia also came out in force, and solidarity protests occurred in Wellington, Auckland, Christchurch and other locations. The Howard's government's industrial relation proposals and anti-terrorist legislation are closely linked. The new sedition laws suggest that industrial disputes or industrial matters may be labelled seditious, where there is an absence of good faith. The reforms further attack the right to strike, while employer use of lockouts is encouraged. For more information, check out the links to the various Australian indie media sites on Global Indie Media at indiemedia.org.
Last Thursday, three medical workers documenting police harassment outside the Common Ground Free Clinic in New Orleans themselves became the target of police harassment. The incident was the culmination of increased daily harassment outside the community clinic and are just a few of the examples of abuse that volunteer relief workers have faced over the past 2 months and that New Orleans residents, especially African Americans, are facing every day. Greg Griffith, a volunteer relief worker, was arrested by the New Orleans police near the Common Ground Free Clinic. Greg was thrown against a car and charged with crossing a police line, resisting arrest and carrying a concealed weapon, a small pocket knife. While handcuffed in the back of the police car, he was told he would be shot and his body thrown in the river. Emily Westerholm, the unit coordinator, was also violently thrown to the ground. The Common Ground Collective was founded by local activist Malik Rahim as a relief organisation in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. Common Ground has a team of volunteers including medical and health providers, aid workers, community organisers, environmentalists and legal representatives who have supported thousands of Gulf Coast residents who stayed and who are returning home. After the latest incident, Rahim, the founder of Common Ground, said, "We're putting a call out for the establishment of a human rights watch in New Orleans and for volunteer lawyers and human rights organisations to help monitor the police behaviour." The clinic was widely praised in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, alongside other grassroots initiatives that sprung up to offer rapid aid, care and information to the New Orleans area. Several initiatives, such as the DIY Wi-Fi communications networks that were set up by media activists, were so successful that government agencies are studying them to see what lessons can be learned from approaching such situations with more flexible, decentralised and volunteer-based models of organisation. For more info on this amazing project, check out commongroundrelief.org as well as neworleans.indymedia.org.
Wednesday at 1 o'clock, it's the Indie Media Radio London Newswire show, coming at you from the streets of London, Infinity and beyond on Resonance FM 104.4.
My name is Stanley Tookie Williams, and I'm speaking to all of you from San Quentin's death row, where I've been residing for more than 23 years. It's never too late to save a child, regardless of how unapproachable, unreachable, or how incorrigible he or she may appear to be.
Stanley Tookie Williams is scheduled to be executed this December 13th.
Call, fax, and send emails to the governor saying that this would be an abomination of justice or stand to be executed.
Call Governor Schwarzenegger now, 916-445-2841. Fax 916-445-4633. Email governor@governor.gov.
For more information, visit tookie.com or savetookie.org.
Tookie was the co-founder in 1971 of the LA Crips gang. In 1981, he was convicted of murdering four people during two robberies and sentenced to death row at San Quentin State Prison. Tookie deeply regrets his gang involvement, but has always maintained his innocence of these crimes. His trial was based on circumstantial evidence and the testimony of several witnesses, all of whom were facing a range of felony charges, including fraud, rape, murder, and mutilation. Even the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals stated on September the 10th, 2002, ruling that the witnesses in Tookie's case had less than clean backgrounds and incentives to lie in order to obtain leniency from the state in either charging or sentencing. There was physical evidence, but none of it pointed to Tookie. While on death row, Tookie has written 9 highly acclaimed children's books that educate young people to avoid gangs, crime, and incarceration. He has also worked to end gang violence through his peace protocol and internet project for Street Peace, an international peer monitoring program. Tookie has saved the lives of over 150,000 youth, as reported by them, their parents, teachers, and law enforcement officials in their emails to him. He has recently published his memoir, Blue Rage, Black Redemption, which has been nominated for a James Madison Book Award. His work has resulted in multiple nominations for the Nobel Peace and Literature Prizes. This summer, Tookie's work was even recognized by the President of the US when he received a presidential award for his volunteer work to help youth. Tookie's story also recently made into a television movie, Redemption, the Stan Tookie Williams story, starring Academy Award winner Jamie Foxx. The movie was honored by the Sundance and Cannes Film Festivals and was nominated for a Golden Globe and other prestigious awards. Tookie, like many prisoners, experienced racism in the criminal justice system. His prosecutor kicked off 3 African-Americans from serving as jurors in Tookie's trial, resulting in Tookie being convicted by a virtually all-white jury. There were no African-Americans, 1 Latino, 1 Filipino, but 10 Caucasians. This prosecutor made numerous racist remarks during the trial, comparing him to a Bengal tiger in the San Diego Zoo, whose natural jungle habitat was the equivalent of South Central Los Angeles. The California State Supreme Court had twice censored the same prosecutor for equally discriminatory behavior. Indeed, a member of the California Supreme Court at that time made the following statement about that prosecutor. He said, "I believe that we must place the ultimate blame on its real source, the prosecutor. It was he who unconstitutionally struck black prospective jurors. The record compels this conclusion and permits none other. The prosecutor knew that such conduct was altogether improper. The trial court told him as much, and so did we. This court attempted to teach the same prosecutor that invidious discrimination was unacceptable when he reversed a judgment of death because of similar improper conduct on his part. He failed, or refused, to learn his lesson. The result is another reversal and another costly burden on the administration of justice." On October the 11th, 2005, the US Supreme Court rejected Tookie's appeal to investigate the racism and discrimination at the heart of his case, as well as Tookie's innocence issues. This denial established as case law for the entire nation the right of prosecutors to exclude jurors on the basis of race and to denigrate minority defendants in front of white juries. We now have a short phone testimony from Tookie himself explaining what he has done to change. And this, I think, shows that he does deserve clemency.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stanley Tookie Williams, and I'm speaking to all of you from San Quentin's death row, where I've been residing for more than 23 years. It was during solitary confinement from 1988 to 1994 when I began to undergo years of educating myself, soul-searching, spiritual cultivation, and self-edification, which in turn led to my redemptive transition. It was by virtue of this ongoing process that I earned the right to both live redemption and to speak on it, even at the risk of being rejected and repudiated by the world. As a redeemed human being, I'm obligated to share with others through my children's books, memoirs, and presently the redemption movie about the wrongness and the tribulations of my past behavior. I want children especially to understand and to avoid the tragedies of a thug life that perpetuates violence, death, and imprisonment. In this struggle, regardless of your race, color, creed, education, socioeconomic status, or geographical locale, you can't turn a blind eye to the perils of society that can affect your children and you. Hear me well. I pray that none of your children will ever experience the living hell that I did. There are thousands and thousands of children who need your help that are being violated, affected, and cast to the wayside like worthless debris. It's never too late to save a child, regardless of how unapproachable, unreachable, unteachable, or how incorrigible he or she may appear to be. There's always a way to help. Remember, it's not up to the children to heal themselves. We adults must find the wherewithal to help them heal whatever it takes. The world doesn't need any more youths evolving into social nightmares that myself and others had become. It is my earnest hopes and prayers that all children in America and abroad will flourish in life and become educated, creative, spiritual, charitable to others, and to restore harmony and safety within society.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't free. For me and my Bobby, yeah. From the Kentucky coal mine to the California sun, hey, Bobby shared the secrets of my soul. Through all kinds of weather, through everything that we've done, your Bobby, baby, kept me from the whole world. I let him slip away. He's looking for that home, and I hope he finds it. But I trade all of my tomorrows for one single yesterday, to be holding Bobby's body next to mine. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, that's all that Bobby left me. Good enough for me and my Bobby, yeah. La da da, la da da da, la da 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 da, la da 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 da, Bobby, yeah. La da 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 da, la da 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 da, la 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 la, Bobby.
The Independent Zimbabwe campaign reports that on Tuesday, the 8th of November, over 115 people were arrested while protesting against poverty and hunger. Trade unionists in their thousands, including other opposition groups, congregated in central Harare for a protest called by the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions. The police sealed off the area and prevented them from marching to the government offices. The police, mainly targeting prominent leaders, then arrested over 100 people and took them to Harare Central Police Station. They were charged under the Public Order and Security Act, notorious for being used to prevent people from protesting against violations of workers and human rights. The arrested included the President and General Secretary of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions and senior members of other trade unions, political organisations and several organisers from the Zimbabwe Social Forum. They and the others were eventually released after intense negotiations with the Attorney General's office. Meanwhile, authorities also released the mayor of Chitunangwiza, who was arrested for addressing a meeting where he spoke about the government water provision to people in his town. The police wanted to charge him for a crime which is punishable by death. Luckily for the mayor, this was thrown out by the Attorney General. The mayor of Chitunangwiza said it's high time authorities in this country realise that intimidation is no longer working to keep us quiet. We have since crossed that boundary where we get intimidated easily. The practice is no longer working and the authorities know it. Whatever tactics they come up with, they will not stop us.
In Colombia, thousands of riot police and army units have been violently harassing a land occupation of 500 people, mostly poor indigenous families. Over the past few days, at least one person has been killed and 37 people have been injured by police beatings and bullets. The situation is reported as tense and supporters have been calling for people to register their concern with the Colombian embassy.
More disturbing news, I'm afraid. On the 14th of November, South African police brutally suppressed a peaceful march of settlement dwellers at the Foreman Road settlement in Clare Estate, Durban. The demonstration, under the slogan of No Land, No House, No Vote, was organised by a shack dwellers movement with 16 affiliated settlements to demand land and housing in the city and to protest against forced removals and the ongoing removal of basic services from shack settlements. They applied for permission to march, but the City Council illegally denied the application. On Wednesday, the 9th of November, more than 5,000 people attended a mass rally in support of the march in the Foreman Road settlement. And on the morning of the 14th, around 3,000 people gathered and decided to march to the nearby Asheville sports field. This was a route that had been recommended by the Mayor's office at a meeting days earlier in the Mayor's presence. Initially, the march proceeded peacefully up Loon Road, and at the top of the road, marchers were met by a police cordon at an intersection. Without warning, police charged the crowd with riot shields, backed up by riot trucks, arresting people as they went. The crowd was chased into the nearby settlement, with police firing rubber bullets, beating people and taking cameras and phones. One of the first arrestees was System Seeley, a 19-year-old elected committee member from nearby Kennedy Road settlement attending the march with her young baby. She reported that the police attacked her, demanding that she name the person responsible for organising the march. When she said that there were people marching all over the world, the police beat her, breaking her teeth in the process. As Ms. Seeley pointed out, people knew the march would be illegal and had been advised that there would be consequences, but no one could have foreseen the ferocity of the police response. For more on that story, see Indie Media South Africa at sa.indiemedia.org.
Enfin, c'est comme ce film, c'est comme si c'est folle, et voilà, un combat gabardiste. Enfin, c'est comme ce film, c'est folle, pour des tripes, voilà, et voilà, quoi, un combat gabardiste. Enfin, c'est comme si une fille voit en combat avec
l'Église.
Enfin, c'est comme si une fille, cette folle, le tout est triple, voilà, et voilà quoi, en combat avec l'Église.
Voilà, 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 voil
First-time activists were out last week when counsellors, teachers and pupils from two Wigan schools formed part of a demonstration against the forcible removal from the UK of Sarah Harter and her children, Dennis, Hope, Maureen, Peace and Morris, all deported to Uganda on the 26th of October. The protesters demanded that the Harter family are returned to their home in Wigan and their solicitor will be enabled to make representations on their behalf. As one campaigner from the school said, Peace is in the same class as my 10-year-old. My daughter and her friends are devastated by Peace's disappearance. As chair of governors at the school that these children attend, I can perhaps voice the distress and the confusion that staff and children are experiencing over this family's removal from our midst. Sarah and the children were taken from Yarlswood Removal Centre just hours after being seen by her doctor, who said the family show signs of post-traumatic stress disorder and are not fit to be removed from the UK, as well as confirming that Sarah Harter has scars of torture, which she suffered during her imprisonment. She was tortured and raped before escaping to Britain in 2002. The entire family integrated very successfully into the community in Wigan and made many friends. Their local community are appalled by the way this popular family were treated in detention and sustained injury during their removal attempts. For more information on this story, see www.asylumsupport.info. And related to that, upcoming this Saturday is the Stop Deporting Children National Day of Action, with protests taking place in London and Manchester, as well as other parts of the country. The London demonstration starts at 1 p.m. at Horse Guards Avenue off Whitehall, and you can get more information about the event at standupforchildren.org.
Buy Nothing Day is almost upon us again, and rather fitting it is, with supermarket aisles already filled with cheap chicken. Christmas decorations from the other side of the world. In 10 days' time, on the 26th of November, Buy Nothing Day is a day where people abandon the creed of commercialism and enjoy all things free. The self-proclaimed festival of frugal living and culture jammers to jamboree. It's a day when campaigners challenge people to switch off from shopping and tune into life. For UK info, check out buynothingday.co.uk. Over in the US, they have Buy Nothing Day on the 25th. And here we play the radio advert for their day of frugal living, the Adbusters Buy Nothing Day MP3.
I don't think we are going to play it because we haven't put it into our playlist, which is a great big bummer. And we're really sorry.
Maybe we can play it next week.
Yeah, we'll play it next week. We'll advertise Buy Nothing Day next week. It's funny, you have to advertise to buy nothing. Also coming up is an international day of protest against climate change. Saturday, December the 3rd, is the day set to see protests in over 30 countries worldwide. It marks the halfway point of the MOP, first meeting of parties to the Kyoto Protocol climate talks, which take place in Montreal from the 28th of November to the 9th of December. Here in London, there's a demonstration, march, rally and meeting at Lincoln's Inn Fields in Holborn at 12 noon before marching past the ExxonMobil offices and the Australian Embassy before ending at the American Embassy for a rally with speeches. Speeches. Campaigners are hoping that this will be the largest climate demo thus far and say that urgent action is needed to prevent the catastrophic destabilisation of global climate. There's also protests in Edinburgh, in Scotland and Dublin. You can find out more at campaigncc.org and also at globalclimatecampaign.org.
Finally, just time to say tomorrow night at 7 p.m. there's an evening of discussion about sustainable rural community projects, and that's at Lark, 62 Fieldgate Street in Whitechapel, E1.
And I just have to make a retraction. Apparently, last week I did one of my kind of, I think now famous flaws. I said that ASBOs were being used against shareholders. Well, they might be being used against shareholders, but what I meant to say in last week's story was they ASBOs are being increasingly used against protesters. Now, that's it for this week. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please keep posting your stories. And if you are out attending the various demonstrations that we've talked about on this show, do post your stories and reports to the Indie Media Newswire at indiemedia.org.uk. And it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Bye.
Bye.
Bush. Bush.
Thank you very much. And I am proud.
I'm honored once again to be with the supporters of the National Endowment for Tyranny.
And I am proud.
I appreciate
directions.
America. Determined to roll back generations of democratic progress.
To receive
borders.
Arabs.
The world has seen
Elvis economics.
And once again, we will see
perks, privileges, partnership, and paralysis.
And I appreciate Cox.
I feel.
And I appreciate great evil.
Great.
To serve a violent political vision.
Every day.
Rejoice in every death.
Every day.
Because we stand for misery and humiliation.
Every day.
Random and isolated acts of madness.
Every day.
Fear with a global campaign of fear with
every day.
That struggle has been worth it.
All right.
And Americans are enemies.
Okay.
Totalitarian empire.
And yes, and yes.
Extremism has been strengthened by the actions of our coalition in Iraq.
And let me say this.
Innocent individuals can be sacrificed. Americans are the most cowardly of God's creatures.
Well.
Mortal danger to all humanity.
I want to talk tonight. I intend to offer Americans
a campaign of fear.
George Bush, you must have been smoking something, and you must have inhaled.
Covered in smoke and ashes.
George Bush consistently made the wrong choices.
Hitler to Stalin to Pol Pot. Pot. Consumed pot. Evil men obsessed with ambition.
And I'm heartened.
Destruction and suffering.
I'm heartened by the Poles.
Terror, 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 terror.
Son, make no mistake. Make no mistake.
And American and Western influence in the broader Middle East.
You know, they're con men.
Expect us to run in our war on terror.
This is serious business.
Violence is always the solution.
A nuclear threat tonight.
Let's share the goal of hurting America.
America is a nation in decline.
A set of beliefs and goals that are evil.
Make no apologies.
We will not.
Forget the election.
Clear and focused ideology. Checked into the wrong hotel.
Okay.
Call for terrorist murder against Christians.
America is second rate, a maximum security prison.
Which spreads propaganda and provides financing and technical assistance to local extremists.
And I did.
Unstable, corrupted charities incite hatred.
And I must say it's about time.
Bush. Bush.
Like a parasite, but not insane.
Just pause for a moment.
Someone else is always to blame.
We must be a military superpower.
Radicalism. Fascism.
Government is too big and spends too much.
America would be better off by cutting our losses.
Government is too big and spends too much. And thus, I will extend paperwork and unnecessary federal regulation. There is no reason.
Iraq is no longer an excuse.
There is no reason.
We have seen this kind of shameless cruelty before.
Well, it was a mistake, and I admit it.
A declaration of war on the idea of progress itself.
Well.
With greater economic and military and political power, and we must stop freedom.
And I did.
One effective response.
Today, cocaine use.
And to rule the soul itself.
Do I want to do more? You bet.
Give in.
Now.
Give in.
Now.
The United States were killers and suicide bombers.
I agreed to a hard bargain.
Terror.
And I believe deeply in this.
Terror.
I believe in teaching our kids.
Cold-blooded contempt for human life.
And I believe.
A warped image of the past.
And I believe.
This is a difficult long-term project.
And I
kill children. and the elderly with car bombs.
And enjoyed it every time.
Our commitment is clear. Murder. Without hesitation.
And I guess you'd say his plan really is...
dedicated to the destruction of our own country.
Now.
Victimization. The United States, evil men who want to use horrendous weapons, have a long history of collaboration with terrorists.
Maybe not a bad idea.
Murder is justified...
If you believe...
And the United States of America is...
ridiculed...
everywhere.
Ridiculed
everywhere.
Slippery when wet.
It is a healthy, sturdy
world
of murder.
We must sue each other.
The mightiest force of history.
Look this. Think about
our future.
Prison. And you don't hear much about this good news.
Whatever it's called, this ideology is
bad,
but it is steady. Tyrants and would-be tyrants.
Bush.
Tyrants and would-be tyrants.
Something fishy is going on.
Yet there's no alternative to it. Having removed a dictator
that we lost.
We do know, however,
why our policies have failed.
Mockmocracy.
Up. Americans are afraid to practice medicine freely. Who wants health care? Americans want blow jobs, and on January 28th,
down
blow job
when it grows.
There's a yearning in America, a feeling that maybe shaking up doctors, shake. Join me, right? Talk. This is more talk. Join me in our new crusade. And I would stand there and look out at the blackness of the sky, broken only by the sparkling stars above. And I believe that America will always have perks, privileges, partnership, and paralysis. May Bob bless you, and may Bob bless the United States of America.
Thank you all.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Did you watch them?